Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:05 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 18th. Well, veteran subscribers will be familiar with the fact that I've been intrigued by the supply of stock in the market and how we might be able to track market cap and the quantity of shares that are in fact outstanding for a long time. That the simple reality is that in any market, supply and demand are two factors that are going to dictate price. And this is particularly relevant right now because we've seen a massive surge in supply of corporate bonds. Over half of all corporate bonds today are currently just one rung above junk rating. And that represents a significant issue in the event that we do move into a more difficult economic environment. Then businesses are going to experience some difficulty. That is going to represent a challenge to their earnings growth, and then because of the quantity of debt, that will put pressure on their leverage. The leverage would therefore start to be noticed by the credit rating companies, and therefore there's the potential for downgrades, which will swell the amount of high yield debt that there is. It would also start to put pressure on that high yield debt simply by the virtue of the fact that the more of it there is, and without an increase or a concomitant increase in the number of people willing to buy it, that would start to push up yields in the best of times. But during an economic contraction, then it would push yields up quite a lot more. So these are issues, but then of course there is the potential issue also that with the burden of funding costs as a result of the rather large increase in the size of the corporate bond market, then that is potentially a threat to the pace of buybacks in the USA. Well, what I did then was I went along to Bloomberg and I created some charts looking at the market cap of major indices and dividing it by the price of the index. We should come up with a number of shares outstanding for the index. So for example, when we look at China, that the number of shares on the index has been trending higher since 2000, and that's the beginning of the data that Bloomberg has. Well, then if we look at the simple shape of the price action, it's been largely range-bound since 2000. In fact, if you look at where the price is today relative to where it was in 2000, the price has gone nowhere. And that's against a background where there has been a massive advance in the supply on the market. But we get a very similar story when we look at Europe. When we look at exactly what's been going on in Europe over the course of the last 20 years, we get an almost identical pattern. So that's very similar in Europe. The supply of stock has been rising steadily, whether that has been because of companies issuing shares, because of an absence of buybacks, an absence of M&A activity, and it's not difficult to really understand why that might be the case, considering the challenges that Europe has had over the course of the last 18 years. But against a background where supply has been rising, then the stock market, and if we go back and look at it since 2000, well, the market peaked in 2000, and in fact, you had a negative return over the same period. So that is another example of just how much we've had this factor has played a part in the underperformance of these indices. Now, for example, if we look at the ASX in the FTSE All Share in the UK, then we're presented with not quite as an advance. In fact, the supply of shares on the UK market has been pretty static since about 2011. So now let's have a look at what the market has been doing over the course of that time period. And of course, we know that the UK has had a number of bouts of volatility in that period, not least because of Brexit. But this is a different looking chart to what we've seen with either China or from Europe. The market certainly hit a significant peak in 2000, but it is significantly above that level even after the decline that we've had recently. So that's an important characteristic here. The supply of stock is going to have had an impact upon the total return on the index. Well, of course, the one market where everybody is aware of the quantity of buybacks has been on the US markets. So, for example, if we look at the New York Composite, so looking at a nice big index of shares, then what we're presented with, and this is a very long-term chart, we have lots of history, but if we simply look at the trend from 2000, we had a big spike in the number of shares outstanding during the collapse of the tech bubble, because the price of the index went down so much without so many shares being taken out of circulation. But from 2002 onwards, it has done nothing but trend down. Well, now let's look at the NY SE Composite Index since 2002. And since 2002, the index has gone up almost three times. So when we talk about the impact that buybacks have had on the market, then it is incredibly profound when it has had a major impact on the supply of shares outstanding. This is just comes down to the absolute fundamentals of any market, that you have supply and demand. And when the supply of stock is being reduced, then it has a supportive impact upon the price action. Well, now the big question is whether the pace of buybacks is going to persist on Wall Street. Against a background where it has been contracting for 16 years, or that they, sorry, the supply of shares have been contracting for 16 years, and it has been one of the primary avenues through which quantitative easing and global liquidity have entered the asset markets, then buybacks are one of the most important sources of demand for this market. Without them, then we could anticipate that it would be not at all un I think or at least it's not an exaggeration to think that the value of a number of US indices in the absence of buybacks would be approximate what we had back in 2000. And that's an awful long way from where we are today. So that suggests that what happens in terms of the corporate bond market, in terms of liquidity provision and buybacks, and therefore corporate earnings, is going to have an incredibly large effect on asset prices, particularly when we regard with regard to the stock market. I think that that is starting to begin to be understood by stock investors. So when we look at, for example, the S&P 500, it broke down to a new closing low yesterday. It spent most of the day in positive territory, and in fact, it's closing pretty much flat on the day. Well, we've had some substantial selling pressure over the course of the last 3 weeks, and we have a short-term oversold condition. We are right in the region of the lower side of the range, and the Fed are meeting tomorrow. So there is certainly an argument here that this is a sell the rumor to buy the news market, and there is the potential here that we could have a rebound in here tomorrow. But what this market needs more than anything else is for a higher reaction low to hold, and so far that hasn't happened. It did look potentially like that was going to be the case at the end of November, and Immediately after the Thanksgiving Day holiday, we had a nice rebound, and it even held out the prospect we were going to have an impressive Santa Claus rally, but that did not turn out to be the case, and we have now moved to a new low for the S&P 500. Now, importantly, the NASDAQ, which has been the leading index, has also moved to a new low, but it is not in the region yet, at least, of the February lows. But here we have a very clear progression of lower rally highs, and that would need to be broken in order to really confirm that we are not now in a supply-dominated environment. The underperformance of the banking sector is certainly something that is worthy of consideration, that we have had a meaningful deterioration over the course of the last 3 weeks. But perhaps the more important point is that we did have some evidence of acceleration at the end of last year. Then we had it breaking down below the trend mean and encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, and the trend mean is turning downwards. So this is a downtrend, and we have successions of lower rally highs, and until that succession of lower rally highs is broken, then this is a supply dominated environment. Banks are liquidity providers, and in a bull market, banks should do reasonably well. And until the beginning of this year, banks did do reasonably well, in the USA at least. But now banks internationally are breaking down. And to the extent that they're not breaking down, they're trending down. They've been trending down for quite a long time already. So the European banking sector has been in a range for much of the last decade, and it is now coming back down towards the lower side of that range. When we look at the Chinese banking sector, it has been just about holding on, but it broke down in here today, and now it has broken its succession of higher reaction lows. Here we're going to have to see a very clear upward dynamic to really confirm that we're still seeing some overt signs of support for the market coming through from the Chinese government. China's economy is contracting. It is contracting because there is an incredibly high degree of leverage within the market. The government has been weighing on the shadow banking sector. They have been trying to curtail some of the excess rather irresponsible lending that's been going on in the regional banking sector. It's obviously experiencing some stress as a result of the trade war. And these are all weighing on the stock market. So now the big question that has not yet been answered is, where is the next big source of liquidity going to come from? Well, the answer is potentially China, they could go for a big fiscal stimulus. And that could certainly help to improve the liquidity condition globally. But the ECB has ended its quantitative easing program. The Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet and raising interest rates. That simultaneous tightening of two of the levers of liquidity has caused more than indigestion on Wall Street. It's particularly affecting interest rate sensitive sectors. So the Russell 2000 is leading on the downside, just in the same way that it led on the upside. The underperformance of mid-cap sectors, it tells us that interest rate sensitive sectors globally are underperforming in here, and this is a meaningful break downwards by the MDAX in Germany. When we look at the mid-cap sector in the UK, then it is sustaining this move below 18,000. This is the largest breakdown that we have seen, even within the context of what has been a rather inconsistent trend. This is the biggest decline we've seen in the course of what has effectively been a 10-year advance. When we look at the small caps in Australia, then they have also sustained a move below the trend mean, and this is the biggest decline that we've seen in years. So it's also confirming resistance in the region of the upper side of that range, all the way going back to early 2011. So and we're definitely in a more challenging environment. And then The big question is what's going to happen in terms of Fed policy. I think it is too much to hope for that the Fed is going to simply ride to the rescue, excuse me, ride to the rescue tomorrow. That's simply not how central banks work. I think when people think about when exactly QE1, 2, 3, or 4 were announced, it was after big pullbacks. We haven't really had a big pullback. So that's, I think, something that is probably starting to also be factored into markets. Now, when we look at, for example, 10-year Treasury futures, we're starting to see that we have a higher reaction low here. It's coming right up to the upper side of this range. But I think importantly here, it is back above the trend mean and steadying. So this is now looking like a break of what has effectively been an almost 3-year downtrend. And this is certainly evidence of a flight to quality. The dollar index was well off its low in here today, and it has continued to hold this mild succession of higher reaction lows. There is an increasing consensus that the dollar is going to break down in an awfully big way, but we don't see any evidence of it just yet. And what that continues to highlight is that the USA certainly has some challenges, but that the challenges are much larger elsewhere. Well, gold prices were a little bit steadier in here today. They're right in the region of the trend mean and challenging this $1,250 area. It's held a succession of higher reaction lows over the course of the last few months. So this is potentially another safe haven that people are beginning to take notice of. The Swiss franc has been largely range-bound against the dollar, so that's also beginning to give some evidence that there is a demand coming through in there, considering just how firm the dollar has been, and the yen has also strengthened up somewhat in here. So what that is beginning to suggest is that people are looking at the outlook for safe haven assets. Then there is the 2-year yield, and it has pulled back here by 4 basis points in here today. So it's rapidly unwinding the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Well, now let's ask ourselves, was there evidence of acceleration? And I think that we definitely had evidence of acceleration. Now the question is whether the region of the trend mean is going to represent support. And I think that that is very much a 50-50 bet in here, considering how much of a risk-off environment we're starting to get. I think it's quite likely the Federal Reserve are going to raise interest rates tomorrow, but that's probably going to be the last interest rate hike of this cycle. And then the big question is, what are they going to do about the size of the balance sheet? Because this is a graphic representation of quantitative tightening. If we had to look for the evidence of why it is that we have this increase in volatility, then this is it. And if they go ahead with removing $600 billion from the size of the balance sheet next year, then that is going to have a deflationary impact on the economy in much the same way that doing that had for the European economy. The only other central bank that has removed liquidity from the market is the ECB. They took €1 trillion out of circulation between 2012 and 2014, and they basically caused almost a depression in the European economy, and the response was to add €2.6 trillion back in, so 160% more than they had taken out, because of and that was just to level off the economy after the mistake of trying to take the liquidity out of circulation. So what the I don't think that the Federal Reserve quite realizes that they're playing with fire here, and that the potential policy response is going to be another round of quantitative easing, which would dwarf what we've seen already. So that's potentially out there on the horizon, but it's unlikely they're going to do anything until after they get a decline. And we are in the midst of a decline. I do think that there is the potential for a rebound in here tomorrow. And I think a lot of people are thinking like that. So This is the big question is whether that's not already in the price. Well, we're going to see tomorrow because there's a lot of shorts in the market, and if they start to get pressured, then we could get a meaningful rally for risk assets in here. Now, the bigger question though is how far that rally will persist, and then whether the low will hold. We need to see progressions of higher reaction lows in order to demonstrate that the lows are in for this market. And the number of factors that are mounting up against the market continues to increase. Well, the yield curve spread was in positive territory in here today, and it's now at about 17 basis points, but it has an awful lot of work to do if it's going to start rallying from here. And it is at very flat levels indeed. And then when we look at the high yield sector, well, high yield bond spreads continue to march higher. This is a very clear breakout from a range, and ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And it's looking increasingly likely that high yield spreads are going to move through 5%. And it is usually by when they move above 5% that we start to see wobbles in asset prices. Well, we're starting to see wobbles in asset prices already. And now the question is whether we're not then going to see some additional lows put in by markets if high yield spreads continue to march higher. What I think is interesting is that GE has at least stabilized. There is an argument that there is so much bad news has already been priced in that it is companies like this potentially represent value. But I was talking with a broker yesterday, and he was basically saying, well, there is no point buying anything today because you look like a moron half an hour after buying it. And then you've got to go off and explain to clients why you're buying something that's going down. So he was basically saying that he's just trying to get through the end of the week, and that he's going to go off and come back and relook at markets in January. I was talking with someone else at the gym this morning. She's a rather wealthy private individual, and she's been in higher yielding shares like, unfortunately, Johnson & Johnson and Blackstone, and wanted to hold off until January to take the tax deductions on any of her gains. She didn't want to sell before the end of the year, and now she's resolved that she's just going to hold on. So these are the kinds of activities that are going on in the market right now, that people are pulling back from the market. They're not buying. That's the most important fact. That the common characteristic behind those two very different people is that they're not buying. Well, that's also telling us that there's a withdrawal of demand from the market, that people are getting progressively more cautious. Well, that also is reflective of the fact there's a lot of bearishness about, and we do have short-term oversold conditions. So it is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we're going to get a bounce here. But then, of course, the big question is how much of a bounce are we going to get? So I think these are some of the important characteristics. But what I do find quite interesting is that when we look at, for example, some of the ASEAN markets, that where you do have growth, where you do have the rise of the global consumer, then it is in the emerging markets outside China where there are the real opportunities here. When, for example, we look at the technology sector in China, which has made all the running in terms of performance, well, Tencent had rallied to unwind its overextension relative to the trend mean, and now it's pulling back. Well, the big challenge is going to be whether it can find support above the lows it's put in, but it does look like we're going to see at least a retest there. Then, if we look at the big name technology companies in the USA, well, the Amazon price is right in the region of the trend mean. It's been ranging around it for the last 6 weeks, and it has not broken down to a new low. Well, If it can hold the low put in yesterday, and today's move was certainly not dynamic in nature, then we could have a higher reaction low, but I don't think anyone's going to be truly convinced until we see the price back above $1,800. Well, that's rather considerable volatility, considering that it has to rally $250 on a $1,500 share in order to break the downtrend. That's a significant move within the range. That'll tell us that just how volatile the share is. But I think the important point, of course, is that Apple is not, or excuse me, Amazon is not leading the market lower, and neither is Google. Google prices today were bouncing from the $1,000 area, and $1,000 is an awfully big psychological level for the market. But Apple has got a lot of exposure to China and the trade war, and on top of that, it has products that have reached something approaching some kind of saturation in the market. Everyone who wants an iPhone probably has one, quite whether it's the newest one or not, I think is probably beside the point. And then we have that news story yesterday about the extent to which Russian interference in the 2016 election made use of both Facebook and Instagram. So that I think is rather important that Facebook was up in here today. That it has been declining for the last 6 months, primarily in response to the revelations that was it Cambridge Analytica had been using to help the Trump administration win, and then also that had been deployed by the Russians in trying to influence the result of the election. Well, that also represents some selling the rumor to buy the news. So there is the potential here that we have seen a lot of selling pressure, and that there is at least some evidence that the shares that led us into this decline are beginning to demonstrate some support here. So, while there are definitely challenges, the yield curve has not inverted and the US economy is not yet in a recession. The much bigger question is about liquidity. Liquidity is much more about asset prices, and asset price inflation has been as a result of liquidity. Therefore, doesn't necessarily mean that we need to have a recession in order to have asset price contraction. That's, I think, probably what we're seeing right now, that this reduction in the supply of global liquidity is a meaningful event, and it is having an impact on asset prices. Quite whether it has the same impact on the economy has yet to be seen. So definitely the odds of an economic contraction are rising in the USA, but I don't think the US is going to be the first economy into a contraction. I think that mantle is going to be grabbed by a number of countries in Europe, and of course the economic slowdown that we're having in China is also a very meaningful event. Well, what that also highlights is that it is in China and in Europe where the epicenters of risk lie. Well, considering the size of those economies, that's going to have a knock-on effect for the globe. But it's within the emerging markets outside of China where we have some of the more attractive valuations and the bigger growth stories. And that they are probably the places to pay particular attention to as we monitor the extent to which this contraction starts to take hold. Then what we'll also be looking for are the kinds of instruments that show early relative strength. And I think it's a little early for making that, or I think that prognostication just yet. But certainly, I think the whole market will be keeping a very close eye on what the Fed has to say tomorrow. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.